We are not coming to you live from your microwave, but we are back with an all-new episode. California Congressman Eric Swalwell joins us to discuss future form, and we've got the latest on the Trump administration's new budget, Trump Care, the Comey hearings, and Chelsea Galizia officially joins the show. It's Tuesday. Welcome to Political Culture.
You're tuned into Black Hollywood Live, Political Culture.
Hey guys, welcome to Black Hollywood Live and AfterBuzz TV's Political Culture. I am your host, Drexel Hurd. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Drexel Hurd. I am joined officially by Miss Chelsea Galizia on
Yay,
the show.
Yay, thank you for having me officially.
Welcome back.
I love how you just sort of kind of told me officially, like this weekend at your engagement party, that this was like my new full-time gig.
I did. That's how we do it here in Hollywood, because you don't have a lot of time. But
I'm so happy to be here, and especially with our first guest today.
This is our first guest, and I'm very excited. We'll talk to him in just a second. Be sure to use the hashtag ABTVPolyculture to join the conversation. If you're in the chat room, hello.
That's also, P-O-L-I, not like multiple cultures.
Not like poly.
Okay, good.
No.
Just checking.
Follow us on Twitter at ABTV Polyculture, and you and follow AfterBuzz at AfterBuzz TV. We're going to get to all the latest in Washington because there is so much to unpack from the last couple of weeks. But first up, he is the congressman from the 15th District here in California. He's a member of the House Intelligence and Judiciary Committee, a millennial leader, and the chairman of the Future Forum in the House of Representatives. Welcome to the program, Congressman Eric Swalwell.
Drexel, Chelsea, thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. Like I said before we went live, you had a busy day today, so you guys can check out his interviews.
Is this
on
stop number five for you just today?
This is stop number late.
This is
for
stop
us.
Number.
I started with Morning Joe, and we had, of course, our work continues in Congress. We had a hearing yesterday on the investigation into Russian interference, and it's only Tuesday.
It's only
shaping up to be a long
and it's only
week.
2 months into the Trump administration, so it's going to be a long 4 years if we get to that
point.
Can
we bring you some kale smoothies? Is there something we can do to keep your spirit up?
I would love that. And, you know, we still have a Thursday vote on the repeal effort of the Affordable Care Act, which I hope does not happen, but we are barreling toward that.
Which, from what it sounds like, the GOP might not be able to get their act together. The Speaker might not have enough votes for that. But let's talk quickly just about yesterday's Intelligence Committee hearing. So did you learn anything from yesterday's testimony? Did you learn, like Chairman Nunez learned yesterday, about Roger Stone and Carter Page? Because he kind of like just heard about them yesterday, apparently. But was there anything from yesterday's testimony with James Comey and Mike Rogers that you learned that's new?
I've been connecting the dots between Donald Trump and his team as far as personal, political, and financial ties with Russia now for, you know, the last few months. We've also been connecting the dots as to the Russian government and the interference campaign they ran in our last election. And the question that we've asked is, was there a convergence of these ties and Russia's interference? And that concern was validated by Director Comey telling the Congress that under these extraordinary circumstances, he was going to reveal an active investigation into the Trump team with respect to the Russia interference campaign. So I feel like the concerns we've expressed have been validated. We now just want the FBI to follow the evidence, pursue all leads, and hold anyone accountable if they did work with Russia.
There are some people that have already or are losing faith in Comey based on what he came out with before the election. Do you have faith in him?
I do. And, you know, I think the last election, you know, is the past. We're in the now. As you can see, the now is quite messy. And we just want to make sure never again does a foreign entity or a foreign adversary like Russia attack our election and work if they did with any U.S. persons.
And then let's just say that there is, you know, some serious evidence to show this link. Is impeachment the next step?
Maxine Waters seems to think so.
You know, I'm focused on the I word that is investigation, because I think we have to, you know, first investigate, get to the bottom, call the witnesses in, review the documents, including his tax returns. And then, you know, again, follow the evidence. So I don't want to, you know, prejudge what the end of this investigation would be or where it would take us.
Congressman Schiff has been making his rounds a lot.
And, making me proud to have him be my rep.
You guys are making us proud here in California.
He's
which is really great.
He's good.
In terms, I mean, obviously there are a lot of things that as regular Americans who don't have security clearance and as a member of the Intelligence Committee, you do. Is there any evidence that we, the American people, can't see that you can say, you know, there's actually more to the meets the eye, but we just can't discuss that? Because there's a lot of things that James Comey said yesterday that kind of suggested that there was more than he could reveal throughout his testimony.
There's a public report with respect to what Russia did in the interference campaign, and behind that public report is substantial evidence of Russia attacking us. And I have reviewed that in my duties on the committee. But what we want to see now is whether the connections that Donald Trump and his team have with Russia, you know, extended to working with Russia. And I just want to, you know, walk just briefly through what we did in the committee yesterday, which was starting with showing that Russia is different than Australia or Great Britain or Mexico. I mean, this is a country that has been and still is a foreign adversary. Then showing the different ties, then going through how Russia traditionally uses financial distress and financial influence to try and get somebody on their side. Then going through the policy changes that we saw from the Republican Party at their convention that was done at the behest of the Trump team. The attorney general who, as Senator Sessions, opposed Russia and wanted to vote against any treaties with Russia, who now is a very pro-Russia attorney general, to Michael Flynn, who was going over to Russia and then lying about it when he was asked under oath – I'm sorry, when he was asked by the vice president if he had any contacts with the Russian ambassador. So you're seeing policies change at the same time that the Russians are running their interference campaign. So that's – you know, pretty, I think, damning evidence that there were connections, policies were changing, Russia's not our friend, and most importantly, we need to know, were they working with Russia? So there's a lot more to dig into on this, and we're really only in the first inning of this investigation.
So then my question is, with all of that evidence that you just kind of laid out to me and Chelsea, which just makes sense to us, why is it that Republicans seem to be so focused on how that information got out? Why can't they focus on both? Is that something that you're hearing from your colleagues, like, well, we actually can only focus on one because that's what we're being told to focus on? Or, you know, I think it was Representative Elena Ross Lethen, who's on the Republican side, like, she had some very specific questions, and they weren't connected, they weren't focused on the leaks. So why is it that Republicans can't seem to be able to walk and chew gum at the same time?
You know, it was frustrating that the lesson that they took away from the director of the FBI saying the president and his campaign are under investigation was, well, what about the leaks? I mean, that's the wrong lesson to take away from this. I hope, and I'm still optimistic, that this will be an opportunity to unite for them to finally have reality set in and understand that, you know, they don't have to defend somebody who has been so disloyal to our intelligence community and has demoralized their work. And that, you know, we can just follow evidence. That's, you know, what we should do on this committee. And I hope they see that as a liberating experience yesterday.
Well, hopefully we will get some answers. I know you've got a few more members of the Trump administration or past members of the Trump administration, or what do they call them, kind of like sideshow people? That's what John Spicer
apparently
called them.
Michael Flynn was just working phone banks.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like Manafort, the campaign manager, just tangentially involved.
Right. So hopefully we'll see some things next week. So thank you for your work on the intelligence hearing. So you've been working with the House of Representatives on Future Forum. Can you kind of explain what you've been working on with Nancy Pelosi and how Future Forum came about and what you guys are working on now?
Yeah, Leader Pelosi came to me a couple years ago and said, boy, we've got a pretty young Democratic caucus, and you guys are pretty connected to what young people are caring about and doing across the country. Why don't we take that on the road and more formalize it? So I took our youngest members, it's 26 of us now, and, you know, Drexel, we came in being confused for the interns. And then we sort of, I think, graduated to being the IT help desk, you know, helping our senior members set up Snapchat and Facebook and Instagram accounts. And then I think in short order, we were recognized as being millennial whisperers and being called upon to understand and speak to the issues of our generation. And so we've gone to about 37 cities now in the last couple years, listening to young people wherever they gather, community colleges, colleges, workforces with a lot of millennials, and then coming back to Washington, D.C. based on what we learn and standing up for those folks with the policies we craft, whether it's college affordability, giving people access to this new economy, or making sure that they can realize the American dream of homeownership.
So when it comes to are you guys coordinating with the national committee? How is that coordinated? Because Democrats seem to have a millennial problem, or at least kind of had a millennial problem during the campaign. Is there some coordination with the House members and what Chairman Perez and Deputy Chairman Ellis are going to be working on, or are you guys separate entities? Because I think that some people might start to see might be confusing for people because there's so many different ways they can be involved, and it's not one message.
We sent a letter to every Democratic National Committee candidate for the chair position that asked, would they commit to spending as much on millennial outreach as the Republicans have? And we were encouraged that DNC Chair Perez, Tom Perez, has told us that he wants to work with us. He wants to make sure that we not only meet that commitment but exceed it. And so, I do think there's opportunities going forward. And you know what? We can learn a lot from Bernie Sanders and how he reached out to millennials, because I don't think it's just being a young person connecting with a young person. He showed that the oldest candidate in the race who was being authentic and standing up for Democratic values could also connect with young people. So I think there's a lot to learn there.
And do you think that young people are still in this, are still as big a Bernie fan and still as close to the policies that he wanted as when, you know, Bernie was sort of in the race?
They do. They want a debt-free education. They want to make sure that they have access to healthcare, especially if they're moving from job to job in such an unstable economy. They want money out of politics. They understand that it has a corrupting influence, and that if we had a public financing system, that we would probably have, I think, a more collaborative Congress that reflects the collaboration that you see in our generation. And I think our future forum members are hearing that, are not just talking that, but walking that in what we do back in Washington.
Speaking of money and politics, I saw on your website that you have a long list of bills that you've co-sponsored regarding cleaning up money and politics, campaign finance reform, and some of them seem so objective that either side could have sponsored any of these. Do you have much bipartisan support? Are there Republicans that are co-sponsors of any of, I can't remember if it's like seven or eight of them that you had listed that seem pretty neutral and gerrymandering? I mean, voting rights, we know that one party doesn't like voting rights so much. But really simple, basic things that it seems that either party could be behind.
Chelsea, what I have found is that it's actually talking to the former members, the former Republicans. I was just talking to one last night, and he was saying, you know, he spends so much time having to do fundraising, and we've got to fix that. And he's right. We do spend way too much time doing fundraising. I think the outside influence of corporate dollars because of the Citizens United case is also really, I think, taking the Republican Party, especially, to the far right. And so I would like to get money out of politics, but I would like to find not just former members who agree with me, but current members, because it's going to take the courage of Republicans to really put, I think, free and fair elections without the influence of money forward. That's what it's going to take.
Maybe you can help Drexel and I settle an ongoing debate that we have.
All right.
My position is that money in politics is the biggest linchpin of all of many of the problems that we face, from mass incarceration to corruption of food supply, what's going on in healthcare, big farm. But many of the problems that we have, if we took out the role of money in politics, would alleviate a lot of the problems, if not fix a lot of them. Drexel's priority on getting money out of politics isn't with the same enthusiasm as mine is. So should we be, and I believe that we should be rallying millennials and Democrats to get behind this money out of politics cause first and foremost, because it will take care of so many other problems, I believe. Drexel's a little like, well, I'll let him speak for himself, but not so much enthusiastic about being so focused on that issue. How important do you think that issue is?
Chelsea, the policy purist in me says it's the most important thing.
Yes! Does that mean I win?
But the political nature of this is that no voters are going to the streets with signs that say, take money out of politics
in mass numbers.
Wait. And that's what's so frustrating because...
I was there. I got arrested last year. Did you hear of Democracy Spring when, like, what was it, 1,200 of us over the
You know what? I did see you. I did see you. Yes. You guys came to Washington. I remember you. My office building is right next to the Capitol. I remember you walking by.
I know you're being funny, but I really was there, and I really did get arrested for. And that's what we were all marching with the signs, money out of politics. You know, corruption is, you know, alive and well in America. So it's a real thing, and some of us are, just probably not as many as you'd like to see.
I would love to see so many more because it is the root of our inability, I think, to do the right thing, whether it's on gun violence. That's one where it's very frustrating, whether it's on clean energy, clean oil. I'm sorry, clean air, clean water policies to get, you know, the dirty oil money out of politics. And so many, you know, of these policies are held back because so many members live in fear of a couple million dollars being dropped on their head because they're not conservative enough. And so collaboration is a bad word. And I hope that we can change that in my time here in Congress.
I just want to ask one question. I mean, I don't want to get into the debate of whether where money falls, because John Ostroff, he's got his campaign in Georgia right now, and the super PACs are descending on the Georgia 6th right now. Are you and a few of the other Democratic young leaders going to go down there and help him out?
I'm going to be down there. I'll be down there in the second week of April, right before the election. Younger members will be joining me, and we're actually making phone calls in my congressional district to volunteer for him, and also asking people to make small dollar contributions to him so that he has the resources that he needs.
Well, we definitely good luck down in Georgia. Good luck to John Ostroff as well. Where can everybody follow you on Twitter? Because your Twitter lights up my day.
Very entertaining. Love it. Keep it up.
And at you Rep. And Ted Swallow, REPSWALWELL is my official Twitter account. And the same is for Snapchat. That's where the best stuff happens because it disappears in 24 hours.
And where can they find more information?
Except for the Russians. I think they have all that.
They probably do. Where can they find more information about Future Forum?
So go to our website, swalwell.house.gov, and they'll learn where we've been, what we're hearing, and what we're going to do next.
Awesome.
Thank you so much.
We'll let you get to sleep.
Chelsea.
Good luck next week. Thank you so much.
Of course. My pleasure.
Like we said, you guys can follow Representative Swalwell at Rep Swalwell. He is so funny. He is so great
Keeps
on Twitter. He's got so many charts. There's a chart that Chelsea and I talked about the other day. It was like a web of Trump's connections to Russia. So you guys have to check that out. Make sure you guys follow him. Lots to unpack because I'm not even going to touch the money and politics conversation. Even though we could talk about that all day. Comey Intelligence Committee hearings, you watch it yesterday?
Yeah, for sure. Well, I mean, not when it was live super early in the morning, but later on. Yes,
I was watching. I was sitting at work and I was watching it because, you know, watching it on YouTube live. And there was so much that was happening. I think I texted you and was like, this thing is crazy. There's so much crazy happening.
And I think my response was, which part of the crazy was your favorite?
I don't know, because Adam Schiff was on fire. Actually, all the Democratic members were on fire.
If you are not very clear about the whole Russia timeline and the whole Russian connection, watch that. I think it was like a 10-minute clip of Adam Schiff going through exactly the timeline of who connected with who and how it all works. It was laid out beautifully. He's a former prosecutor, so he laid out the case very clearly. And at the end was like, I don't know. It could be just coincident that X, Y, and Z happened and then A, B, C, and 1, 2, 3, but maybe not. And it just makes it, without asserting any of the new allegations, just based on the facts that we've already ascertained, it seems like a pretty sure thing to me that they're going to find something.
Yes. Like, probably was a great prosecutor who could not seem to get it together was Trey Gowdy. Once again, Trey Gowdy proves that he is not a good person.
I miss that. Why is that?
He's just, you know, every time he gets up there and talks, he was like bringing up Hillary Clinton. He was bringing up Barack Obama. Like, he was bringing up people in the Obama administration the whole time, and you're like, why would you even bring that up? I was actually going to ask Congressman Swalwell just about, like, you know, they brought up evidence. I said, have you seen any evidence that suggests that the Clinton administration, I mean, that the Obama administration, or that the Clinton campaign, or that the Sanders campaign, or any Democratic campaign would have been involved with Russia in the way, in Russia at all, or in the way that Donald Trump's campaign was involved with Russia? Because it seemed that the line of questioning was not only on the leaks that we talked about from Republicans, but who else they can blame outside of the Trump administration.
Yeah, I don't get it. And the other thing that I liked that Comey didn't address in the hearing, but only addressed it when he was asked, was about the wiretapping claim that Barack Obama had Trump, you know, wiretapped. And he didn't, it seems like Comey's like, I'm not buying into that distraction.
Right.
I'll answer it if you ask me, but I'm not going to talk about it in the opening remarks.
And I just want to be clear with everybody, because I don't think that people understood. There was a part in the in James Comey's testimony where he said the Justice Department allowed me to say X, Y, and Z. And Jeff Sessions has recused himself from this investigation, so he cannot make that call. So that falls on the Deputy Attorney General, who was a holdover Obama appointee, who cannot go anywhere yet because she's really the only one that can really sign anything. And Democrats are withholding, or really holding on to Trump's nominee for Deputy Attorney General right now, basically until this is
smart
all
play.
Over.
Smart so. Play. And the other smart thing that I didn't realize until I heard somebody talk about it last night was that it was smart of Comey to come out and say this, say that there is an ongoing investigation into the Trump connection to Russia, because if once it's public, Trump can't fire enough attorneys, U.S. attorneys, to kill the investigation. It can't be quietly undone now that it's been publicly announced. And so I think that it's got some really deep foundational legs to stand on, right, that they can try and pick off people left and right, attorneys. And I don't think it is going to work to shut down the investigation, because
just getting started.
But I think that they were going to try, unless Comey came out with it publicly, they could have still tried to, eat it from the inside out, and so that it just never saw the light of day.
You know what wasn't smart of James Comey to say, though?
What's that?
Was that the investigation started in July.
Why?
They started the investigation on the Trump campaign in July, at the same time that the Clinton that James Comey came out and said the Clinton campaign was under investigation, or Hillary Clinton was under investigation as well. So when he came out in that big old press conference and said what he said about Hillary Clinton, the FBI was investigating the Trump campaign at the exact same time.
So that's probably why there are a lot of people who are pissed at Comey and don't really believe that he's going to do a great job with this investigation. They've totally lost faith in him. And so then you're like,
but I think this puts, I think the fact that he said that out loud probably puts up a little bit more pressure on him. And it's probably going to come from people like Adam Schiff and Eric Swalwell and some senators and some Democratic senators as well, because they've got to go through this whole thing again in the Senate Intelligence Committee. So I'm pretty sure that one of the Democrats are going to come out full throated on why, James Comey, did you not have this conversation about Donald Trump's campaign at the same time that you were out there talking about Hillary.
Yeah, it's really interesting, and there's a lot of Democrats that don't believe in him. I kind of agree with Representative Swalwell, who just said he has faith in Comey to come through and really do a great job.
I think he does. I think James Comey does have a level of respect about his. I mean, he loves his job, I'm sure, but I think that when you get caught up in it, he just got caught up in it, and maybe he doesn't have a good relationship with Loretta Lynch. I don't know. But that wasn't the only thing that happened, like, this week and last week and yesterday. Donald Trump released his budget, or what his proposed budget was.
Yeah.
Did you get a chance to look at that? The blueprint?
You want to know where I got most of my information about this blueprint? Try not to laugh at me. But I think it's a really good source. It was from John Oliver's show. He did a really great job this weekend on breaking it down and making it hilarious so that I wouldn't cry I was seeing all the agencies that were being cut or completely defunded.
Yeah. It is the America First, a budget blueprint to make America great again. I'm a little bit tired of hearing that slogan again, because
Can we just agree that we will never say it here?
Right. And I always say, you know, Donald Trump was at a rally yesterday in Louisville, Kentucky, and I remember, I'm like, first of all, why do you have to keep saying it's your job to just do it? Like, why aren't you just doing it?
Well, I mean, and, I guess if he says it enough times, he'll have people believe that it's actually happening.
Right. I don't know. But let's talk about some of those cuts that you talked to. EPA, 30%.
Yes. Because this was a great clip that they showed on John Oliver's show. Because we only need a little of the environment. That's literally a quote. We only need a little bit of it.
Right.
But we can't get in the way of jobs. What I don't understand is why can't he help create jobs that are clean energy? That, I mean, we all know that coal's on its way out anyway. Even the coal miners in McDowell County, West Virginia, at the Bernie Town Hall said, we know that coal has been on the decline since like the 70s or 80s. We know even that Trump can't bring coal jobs back. The delegate from West Virginia who voted for Trump acknowledged, yeah, I don't really think that he's going to bring coal jobs back.
Right. Which is crazy. I mean, we've talked about it before, where Hillary Clinton's plan, Bernie Sanders' plan, was to help them transition out of coal jobs to more clean energy jobs, and the government would have paid for it. But instead, we're making cuts to State Department, down 28% to $25.6 billion, which is the lowest since 2007. We're making cuts to the Labor Department, down 21%. We're making cuts to Health and Human Services, which probably doesn't even include the cuts to the repeal that they're trying to go down. And then you talked about some programs that they're eliminating.
Right, so National Endowment of Arts and Humanities and
the public corporation. Broadcast.